In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, part two of America's secret history, examining attempted and successful coup d'etats.
What happened was Lincoln did something that had never been done before. He created greenbacks. And those greenbacks were the exact opposite of the central bank. Those greenbacks funded the United States government during the first few years of the Civil War. And they were backed by gold.
If you enjoy Conspiracy Unlimited, why not become a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member? For just $1.99 per month, you'll gain access to two bonus, exclusive, commercial-free episodes per month, plus access to my back catalog of episodes. That's over 350 episodes. To subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Gain Access to Premium Episodes. Again, go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Get Access to Premium Episodes, or click on the link in the episode notes. Conspiracy Unlimited Plus for less than $2 per month. Why not sign up today?
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Wednesday. Author Stephen Harris is here for our ongoing series on America's secret history. We'll delve into the role of international banking interests in the assassinations of both President Lincoln and Garfield. Stephen Harris became fascinated with the JFK, RFK, and MLK assassinations beginning in his teenage years. Then came Daniel Ellsberg's Pentagon Papers, released in the New York Times in 1971, clearly showing that the entire Lyndon Johnson administration lied to the American public and Congress, causing the physical and moral devastation in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. That was all bad enough, but when George W. Bush and Dick Cheney overthrew a sovereign government with no weapons of mass destruction or proof of any terrorist activities by the Iraqi government, Stephen Harris began his 17-year investigative reporting of the U.S. government. He's now so proud to be able to present history buffs and the average book reader who's searching for answers, the truths behind the stories they don't want you to know. He's the author of America's Secret History, How the Deep State, the Fed, the JFK, MLK, and RFK assassinations, and much more, led to Donald Trump's presidency. Stephen, welcome back to Conspiracy Unlimited. Here we go with part two. How are you?
Great to be back, Richard.
So we're working our way through your new book, America's Secret History, and today we land on Manifest Destiny, what you call domestic imperialism. First of all, we're up here in Canada. I remember studying a little bit about Manifest Destiny, but for those not familiar with the term, what does it mean? Where did it come from, that term?
Manifest Destiny was first called that by a newspaper journalist, John O'Sullivan. And as far as I'm concerned, he was the part of the, or the spokesperson for the deep state, because the deep state had to get into the continental United States. We, at the time, were basically in the 13 colonies. There may have been a state or two added, I'm not sure. And Lewis and Clark in 1803 had gone, as most people know from their kindergarten and public school days, Lewis and Clark in 1803 set off across the country to map it and explore it. And when they came back with their results, the deep state must have been salivating, because there were markets that Lewis and Clark reported on that would make them, at the time, millionaires. In today's money, billionaires. And Manifest Destiny was the term meaning the God-given right to expand America's boundaries into all the way to California. What everyone has to understand is the deep state, their philosophy has what I call the PNW, power and wealth. And to get power and wealth, you need new markets. And Lewis and Clark showed that there was an affluent market out there from Pennsylvania and Ohio all the way out to California.
Sure. If I could just interject for a second, though, when you say the deep state requires that, power and wealth desires that, but just the capitalist system, free enterprise, free markets requires that. And I mean, how do you differentiate? Why would it necessarily be the deep state that was driving Manifest Destiny and not just American, the emergence of American ingenuity and free enterprise?
Because capitalism is free enterprise. Capitalism is citizens being able to establish their own businesses as a free enterprise system. But the deep state is an attempt by the industrialists and the money powers, the bankers, to control the world's wealth. That is not socialism, communism, or capitalism. That is an entirely different economic system, which I've termed the PNW, power and wealth.
Right. It's almost akin to feudalism, I would say.
It has to do with that, yes, because that is the end result. What I see is the end result of the deep state is for the few to control the entire power and wealth of the earth, of the world, and for the remaining citizens to be the feudal citizens. That's so in that respect, I totally agree with you.
You're saying the deep state were behind this drive to expand America's borders on the continent, or were they simply along for the ride?
The deep state to me, and what I consider America's secret history, to prove as a timeline from the early 1800s all the way up to the present time, the deep state is to control the world's wealth. For instance, as I pointed out to you in a previous interview, as of February, 2,200 people controlled more wealth than 5 billion people in the world. And with the pandemic, the lockdown, it has to have increased even more because the top 14 richest people in the world made in profit $500 billion, not $500,000, not $500 billion, $500 trillion since the lockdown began. And yet the poor and the middle class and even the lower upper class have suffered dearly. And so that is the key to the deep state, the power and wealth, getting control of 100% of the world's wealth, and in return having the power to control it. That's what I term the P&W. And I believe, and I think my book shows that in the early 1800s, it started. The P&W started with Manifest Destiny.
Would you not agree, though, at least in the early 19th century, the free enterprise engine, and yes, part of that was expanding, go west, young man. That whole idea generated an incredible amount of wealth, not only for the upper class, but also for the middle class. We see the beginning of a burgeoning middle class, which is somewhat attributed to Manifest Destiny and the expansion of the United States economy from this little backwater, 13 colonies, to very quickly one of the industrial powers of the world.
The poor and the middle class during the 1800s in the expansion to the West certainly benefited. There's no doubt about it. They were able to settle. They were able to build farms. They were able to sell their crops. And they certainly benefited along with the immigrants that came over. But the crowd that really existed in the fulfillment of what it needed was the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and the Astors, all the railroad magnates, the bankers, J.P. Morgans, the Kuhn Loebs. They amassed millions. The railroads were given by Congress free land from New York to California to build their railroads. And those railroads made them millions, and they paid no taxes on that land, and they didn't even pay for the land. The goods and the services that they benefited from monetarily was again in the millions, and this is in the 1800s. The Astors and the Carnegies were millionaires. The power that they had was monumental. So yes, you're 100% correct. The many of the settlers going west in Kansas and Iowa and Nebraska and New Mexico to California, especially with the gold rush, yes, many of them benefited, no doubt about it. But the power was in the industrialists and the bankers. And that's the key.
I'm not sure if we had discussed talking about this particular chapter, but I think it's important because it kind of sets the table for what happens thereafter in terms of, well, the assassination attempt against Andrew Jackson, and then later the successful assassinations of both Lincoln and Garfield and even McKinley. But that's the Second Bank of the United States. The first charter for a foreign-owned central bank was in 1791, which lasted 20 years, and that was primarily controlled, I'm assuming, by the Rothschilds and British interests. So that expired, and in the 1830s, there was the Second Bank of the United States. So there was an attempt at a second sort of Federal Reserve, if you will. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Very good, Richard. You, as I told you last time we talked, you do your research. Yes, the second central bank was fought vehemently, and that word vehemently is not used lightly, by Andrew Jackson, the seventh president of the United States. And he was totally against it. He believed that private bankers, which controlled the central bank in the first Bank of the United States and would continue to do so in the second, were totally anti-American and would only be in existence for their own financial gain. And he fought it bitterly. And I think it was 1834 when there was an assassination attempt by the painter of the senator who was the biggest foe to Andrew Jackson. And he tried to kill Andrew Jackson, failed because both shots that he fired misfired. But there's almost no doubt in the world that this senator was behind the attempted assassination. But Andrew Jackson prevailed, and he stopped the Second Bank of the United States from being approved. And that continued all the way, although the central bankers still control a good part of the finances of the United States. That prevailed until 1913. As you said, when the Federal Reserve was instituted.
Right. So the first charter expired for the first central bank, I guess, around 1810 or something. Then along comes the War of 1812 with the British, when the United States and what is now Canada went to war. And that, I guess, really put the United States behind the eight ball. You know, they, as wars often do, they amassed huge debt. And so that kind of paved the way, because they were in such debt now, they're beholden to the bankers. That sort of paved the way for the Second Bank, which again then had a 20-year charter, or a 20-year term, if you will. And that expired on Andrew Jackson's watch. And so he was bound to determined not to grant them another 20-year term, in other words. So that's
exactly
when, right. So that's when the proponents of the British money interest decided to try and take Andrew Jackson out. Were we able to tie with 100% certainty his assassin to this senator? You mentioned that coincidentally, he turned out to be the same man who painted the senator's house.
Yes.
But was it ever proven in court? What happened?
No, it was not, Richard. As a matter of fact, as I told you the last time, America's Secret History only contains facts that were able to be verified. And I could not verify that. And so in the book, it is clearly stated, most likely, since coincidences, generally speaking, don't happen, most likely it was certainly a deep state act to attempt to assassinate Andrew Jackson, but it was never proven. Let me state that America's Secret History is the first book that I know of to even have in it that the painter, the house painter of this Senate foe of Andrew Jackson, was the culprit who attempted the assassination.
Fascinating. Something else that I learned from your book, America's Secret History, was, again, going back to Andrew Jackson. And so, again, the charter for the Second Bank is expiring. Johnson decides, or Andrew Jackson, rather, says, I'm not going to renew it. So what does he do? He takes all of the federal funds, the revenue from the federal government, he withdraws it from this private bank. So the bank, I guess, kind of collapses. And then he completely pays off the U.S. national debt. And as you point out, this is the first and only time in its history the country does not owe a single penny to the private bankers.
Good for you. Yes, absolutely. That's what he did.
All right. So Jackson, as you point out, becomes the first president prior to Lincoln and Garfield to exert his total independence from the money powers. And this is key, I guess, in trying to understand why Lincoln and later Garfield were assassinated.
Yes, key.
Well, during the Civil War, again, you had a huge amount of debt being accrued by both the North and South. Was there a third central bank instituted at this point?
No. What happened was Lincoln did something that had never been done before. He created greenbacks. And those greenbacks were the exact opposite of the central bank. Those greenbacks funded the United States government during the first few years of the Civil War, from roughly 1861 to 1863, roughly. And the money powers, and they were backed by gold, those greenbacks. See, this is the whole thing. What is at odds with the deep state is that the deep state needs soft money. They need, which is what the Federal Reserve is right now, they need money that they can create that is not backed by anything. Because if it's not backed by anything, then that money, the old adage, money makes money. Well, the wealthy can take that money that is not backed by anything, that just keeps increasing and increasing and increasing, and turn it into monstrous amounts of money. And so Lincoln's greenbacks were backed by gold. And that is the antithesis of the industrialists and the bankers, who are basically the deep state. And so that put the fear of God into them, into the deep state, because if Lincoln continued this after the Civil War was over, then other countries would follow suit. And if other countries followed suit, then they would be doomed, because they would not have control of the money. As the first Rothschild said, I think his first name was Anschwab, he said, "If I don't care who runs a government, as long as I control the money." Well, when money is backed by gold, the government controls the money. And that's what Lincoln was doing. And that was one of the fears that caused his assassination. There were others, but that was one of the fears, that after the Civil War, those greenbacks would continue and other countries would follow suit.
Right. And as you say, if it's backed by gold, the government can control it. But if it's simply fiat money, they can print it literally out of thin air, which is what they do. They create money out of thin air and then charge interest for it. So they make money for nothing.
Absolutely, Richard.
More of my conversation with Stephen Harris when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Well, what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the hosts of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator.
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, "I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die."
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Lincoln County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real. And just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
It's time to try the tea everyone's talking about. Nothing does what Life Change Tea does. They have no competition. Life Change Tea helps support a healthy body. It tastes great and leaves you feeling refreshed every day. I can't get enough of my pomegranate super tea. I brew 2 gallons at a time and let it steep in the fridge overnight, enough to last me the entire week. And every morning I have a 16-ounce glass of this amazing GMO non-caffeinated herbal tea. It keeps me regular by providing a gentle cleanse every day. It gets the guck out, as Get the Tea co-founder Ronnie McMullen likes to say. I have tremendous energy and a clear and focused mind. I'm never gassy or bloated, and good health begins with a healthy gut. This pomegranate super tea is not available in any store. You need to go to getthetea.com. Do yourself a huge favor and give it a try. Go to getthetea.com and have a look around. I love the teas, but there's so much more at Get the Tea. There are products for glucose maintenance, your hair, skin, eyes, cardiovascular health, and immune support. Use the code UNLIMITED and all your orders ship for free. All of them. It's time to get your tea from getthetea.com.
In another reality, Richard is a very strong and handsome man. Just not in our reality. Although I heard somebody passing him in the hall the other day, and it was, what a handsome man Richard is. I made that up. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Author Stephen Harris is here, and we're discussing the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. So the official story of Lincoln's assassination, of course, is that John Wilkes Booth, this famous actor, it's hard to imagine, you know, John Wilkes Booth would have been like today's, I don't know, George Clooney. He was that famous. He was that well known. So imagine someone like a George Clooney assassinating a president. But that's, you know, what happened. But I guess the official version is that Lincoln or Booth hated Lincoln because Booth was an avowed, he was pro-slavery, Lincoln was anti-slavery, and it was sort of that cut and dried. But so let's tie it back then to the creation of those green dollars versus the central bank. How does Wilkes tie into the money interests?
I believe, and I believe that America's secret history proves it, that the way it ties in is that the money powers, including the radical Republicans, which was the group of politicians in the House of Representatives and the Senate that opposed Lincoln, that the both of them hired John Wilkes Booth to kill Lincoln, his vice president, Andrew Johnson, and his secretary of state, William Seward. And if that had happened, it would have been a complete coup d'etat, because the entire government, United States government, would have changed from Republican to radical Republican. And all historians know that the conspirators, John Wilkes Booth and the six or seven conspirators, were out to kill those three people. But no one except one magazine, not one historian in any of their books that I found, ever said or ever claimed that the attempted assassination of Lincoln, Johnson, and Seward would have constituted a coup d'etat. And that is astounding to me. And I offer proof in the Lincoln chapter in America's Secret History that it was the bankers, the industrialists, and the radical Republicans, rather than the Confederacy, which is what most historians claim, hired John Wilkes Booth to kill not only Abraham Lincoln, but his vice president and his secretary of state.
And that is because of Lincoln and his administration's commitment to continue printing greenbacks.
And the Reconstruction. Remember, the war was over. The war was basically over. When Booth went up to Massachusetts, as detailed in the book, and presumably, and I offer proof that John Wilkes Booth met with Senator Sumner, and not the Confederacy, as virtually most other historians claim, that it was for the implicit reason to commit a coup d'etat, get rid of the United States government so that greenbacks would disappear and the Reconstruction period from 1865 onward would redefine the South as duplicating the North, because that's what they wanted. They wanted the South to be completely responsible to the North. And Abraham Lincoln did not. Abraham Lincoln wanted the South to resume outside of slavery. Abraham Lincoln wanted the South to resume its way of life, not the Reconstructionists. And those two reasons, I believe, was the reason for the coup d'etat, for the attempted coup d'etat.
So how long did those greenbacks serve as legal tender?
For most of the Civil War, although in 1863, the Senate passed a law, and I temporarily forget the name of the law, that limited the greenbacks and brought in a certain amount of central banking to the United States monetary system.
That was the National Bank Act.
To be perfectly honest, I forget, but you're probably right.
So after Lincoln's assassination, he's succeeded by his vice president, Andrew Johnson, and the first president to be impeached. I'm not sure if you cover this in the book, but was that impeachment also an attempt, because the coup d'etat was, I guess, sort of stalled because Andrew Johnson survived the assassination?
Exactly.
So is that how they tried to continue on with the coup d'etat, through impeachment?
Well, there's no proof, but of course, absolutely. I mean, they failed. Wilkes Booth's conspirators did not even go near Andrew Johnson. William Seward's attempted assassin did severely injure him, but did not kill him. And so both Johnson and Seward were left. And so the coup d'etat was a failure. So the obvious conclusion, without proof, is that yes, the powers that be, the radical Republicans, definitely wanted to get rid of Andrew Johnson before 1868, which was the next election. And so they impeached him, but they failed.
So he was impeached in the House but exonerated in the Senate.
Exactly.
Right. This brings us up to President Garfield, who was the second president to be assassinated. what was happening vis-a-vis the central bank at that point? Was there one during Garfield's administration?
Well, there was never a central bank after the Second Bank of the United States. But the central bankers certainly control a good part of America's finances, of America's economy. But when they didn't control America's economy until, again, the 1913 Federal Reserve Act. But in 1880, when Garfield was nominated for the presidency, they still held a good amount of control over America's finances, just not officially. What happened with Garfield was that Ulysses S. Grant was supposed to get the nomination for his second term. He had been president from 1868 to 1872. But in 1880, he was running again. But for whatever the reason, and nobody really to this day understands it, he did not get the nomination. And the nomination went through something like 35 votes. I mean, it was an enormous number of votes. And in the something like the 35th or 36th vote, in desperation, actually, James Garfield won the Republican Party nomination. And what happened was, and unfortunately, he won the election. And so the deep state, the industrialists and the bankers, were faced with a president who believed in hard money. Now, remember now, soft money is the central banker's dream.
Right. And was Ulysses S. Grant an advocate of soft money, as you say?
He was a puppet, absolutely. Ah. He would go along with anything.
A great general, not such a great president.
He was one of the greatest generals in the history of the country. But he allowed himself to be used. And he would certainly have been used for soft money. Hey, look, Barack Obama, who came into office in 2008 with possibly, arguably, the highest expectations of any president in the history of the country, within the first month or so, hired five Wall Street bankers as his top financial people. Larry Sumner, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner. So, yeah, it happens. There's no doubt about it. But Garfield, so Grant would have been exactly the same as Obama, and the deep state knew it. But they didn't expect Grant to lose the nomination, and they didn't expect Garfield to win the presidency. And so they were faced with a president who believed in hard money and believed to a huge degree. I mean, it wasn't just something that he believed in. It was something that was his being. That was going to be his presidency. Hard money. Money, currency backed in with gold so that it was worth something.
He strikes me as being, although he was a Republican and Andrew Jackson was a Democrat, and obviously, you know, there were different times, nearly three quarters of a century apart, but Garfield strikes me as being a little bit Jacksonian, or even maybe a little bit like Donald Trump, in that he was a little bit reckless in a good way, in that he didn't follow certain protocols. So, for example, he totally ignored seniority in terms of appointing the people that he wanted to key positions.
You're right on. I equate James Garfield to Donald Trump. Donald Trump came into office, and I'm paraphrasing, I forget the exact phrase that he used, but he was going to drain the swamp. And James Garfield, although he didn't use that expression, James Garfield was basically the same. He was going to be his own president. He was going to make Washington clean. And he believed, as we've already said, in hard money backed by gold. He hired, as a Donald Trump would have done in 1880, he hired as his Secretary of Treasury Minnesota's William Windom. And William Windom was the furthest thing from an Eastern banker. Going back to what I just said before, Barack Obama comes into the presidency in 2008 and hires Timothy Geithner, a Wall Street guy who had a part in the 2008 financial crisis. Well, James Garfield comes into office and nominates William Windom as his treasury secretary, which was the furthest thing from the influence of the bankers. I mean, Wyndham didn't give a damn about the bankers or Wall Street or anything. He was for fiscal integrity. And that was the first thing that Garfield did that told the deep state that, hey, we're in trouble here. And then what Garfield did was he made himself the undisputed party leader, again, similar to Donald Trump. And he ignored, this was probably his undoing, not even maybe the hard currency, but he ignored senatorial courtesy, which is what you said, Richard. He appointed individuals to key positions, irregardless of the Senate or the House of Representatives and what they wanted. And that would have put James Garfield completely against the deep state from 1880 to at least 1884, and probably and possibly to 1888 for 8 years. And could they go for that? Well, apparently not, because although we can't prove it in the book or anywhere else that I could find, apparently they couldn't put up with it because 100 days after taking office, 100 days, 3 months, 3+ months, President Garfield was shot in the back at a train station. And although he lingered for a month or two, I forget, he was one more independent president.
Right. He died in your home state of New Jersey. Several yes. months, I think, after he was shot. And of course, every assassination needs a patsy. And in this case, it was Charles Guiteau, I think he's pronounced. Yes. And this is, tell me about this character and what was his supposed motive for killing James Garfield?
I have to be honest with you, Richard. I don't remember. I know it's in the book, but I would have to get the copy of the book off my shelf and start going through. Again, I have to plead that I can't possibly remember every fact in the book. But would you please tell it?
I believe it was over a supposed, an imagined debt, a political debt or something. I don't know whether he felt he was owed something by Garfield. I don't know the details, but it was supposedly over an imagined debt. What do you think America would have been like had Garfield survived for two terms?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, America at the time was going after Cuba. Cuba was a Spanish colony. America had many, at the time, billions of dollars, and that's a huge amount of money for the 1890s, invested in Cuba. And they could have made a lot more. And so they offered Spain a lot of money, I forget how much, a lot of money to buy it. And that is ultimately what caused the Spanish-American War. That we detail in America's Secret History.
Right. We're gonna pick up in the next episode. We'll pick up with the Spanish-American War. But yeah, it's an interesting contrast. It's like, no, if Garfield had lived, there may not have been, likely would not have been, the Spanish-American War. Similar to had Kennedy survived, there probably would have been no Vietnam War.
That's exactly right. That's the point. That's the point I was probably going to get to. I don't know. You know, Garfield would have ended if he had served two terms. Garfield would have ended in 1888. The Spanish-American War was 1898, a decade later. So it's almost impossible to know what would have happened. But in my opinion, after researching Mr. Garfield, if he had served two terms, I think the government would have been a totally different government than it was in 1898, in 1888, excuse me. But I can't guess what would have happened.
All right, Stephen, we're going to pick this up in a couple of weeks, perhaps, and we'll begin with the Spanish-American War. Remember the Maine.
I'm game. I'm there.
Okay, Stephen, thank you so much. Talk soon.
Thank you, Richard. Bye-bye.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a few moments to provide a few details on an upcoming episode. One tablespoon of ESS60 from C60 Evo helps keep me pain-free, energized, and mentally focused. And I'm sleeping so much better since I started taking ESS60 back in November. ESS60 is the consumable form of C60, the miracle molecule discovered by Nobel Prize-winning chemists in the 1990s. ESS60 is a mega antioxidant, 172 times more powerful than vitamin C. Check out the Paris study, a peer-reviewed scientific study online, where ESS60 suspended in olive oil was fed to rats. The rats fed ESS60 lived almost twice their normal lifespan. I can't sit here and tell you I'm going to live to be 112, but I'm 56 and I haven't felt this youthful, energized, and pain-free since I was in my 20s. ESS60 from C60 Evo. If you want to discover the benefits of this amazing miracle molecule for yourself, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the link for c60evo.com. And don't forget to use the code RS1SPEC when ordering, and you'll receive an additional 5% off. ESS60, the miracle molecule from C60 Evo. It's changed my life. Discover what it can do for you. This product has not been evaluated by the FDA and is not intended to cure, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider. Coming up next time, Encounter in the Desert, the case for alien contact at Socorro.
Talked about them being the size of children or small adults, and that when one of them looked at him and saw him there, seemed startled, and they both disappeared around behind the landed craft. The craft had sat down, landed. By the time he got there, there was a sound like a vault door closing. There was a roar, and the thing lifted off, drifted horizontally for a while, and then shot up into the sky.
Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.